Hi, everybody. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Robin, for giving me the opportunity to do service. I am from San Diego. I have been in OA. It'll be 22 years in March. I've never stopped coming. And when I entered the doors, I weighed 200 pounds. My size 20s were tight. And today, I weigh 130 pounds. I wear a size 6, so I've lost and maintained a 70-pound weight loss. And it has made such a huge difference in my life. I don't think I was born a compulsive eater, but I certainly did love sweet things. And I'm going to try and really limit this and just be very vague about the foods. Okay, I hope I don't go beyond your guidelines. But I always look forward to Easter Sunday because my basket had all sorts of goodies in it. But he had the most important thing was this bunny that was about 8 inches tall, and it was solid, and I loved it. And I would start gnawing on it, and I'd start gnawing from the ears, and I'd go down, and then my mom would get the knife, and she would cut it into pieces for me because it was solid. And it was kind of like, that was just something I always looked forward to. I loved it, absolutely loved it. And the next thing that I can remember as I got a little bit older, probably, oh, I don't know, maybe preteens, maybe around, you know, 10. My mom was a great baker. She loved to bake, and she would store all of her goodies in these round tins. And we lived in a bungalow. I was born and raised in the Chicago area. And we had a bungalow, and the attic wasn't heated. And so she would open the door to the attic, and the steps would go up, and she would put these tins on the steps. And I can remember getting a sweater and opening the door when she was in another room or she was down in the basement or somewhere. And I would sneak up the steps, and I would sit on the steps, and I would open these tins, and I would indulge in the contents of the tins. Another recollection I have is, same thing, about the same age, is that we had this corner store. I don't know, in the 50s, you know, there were like corner stores every few blocks, you know, and there were mom and pop places where you could go and get groceries or milk and bread, you know, that kind of thing. And this store had a huge counter. It must have been, it looked like it was maybe 8 feet long and maybe 3 feet wide. And it was up on an angle, and it was all full of sweet treats that you could buy. And you'd go in there, and the owner would give you a little brown bag. And I would usually go in, I'd have a quarter for my allowance, and I would fill that back up with all these little individual sweets. And then that would be it for the week. I can also remember going to friends' houses, and we'd have salty snacks, and she'd open the bag, and she'd put a little, take out two bowls, and she'd put some in one bowl and some in another bowl for me. And then we'd go in the TV room, and we'd watch TV, and we'd eat. And I remember I would be all done, and she would still have half of her bowl filled. And I would just want more and more and more. For me, it was, you wouldn't put things in the bowl. You just take the whole bag, you know? And then I would hide things from my mom. As I got a little bit more probably into puberty, I would start hiding things. I had more money for an allowance. I would buy things, and I would hide them in my bedroom so that at night I could snack. These were the things that I remember doing. When I hit puberty, which was about 11 years old, the intensity for sugar and salt became so strong. And that's where I started gradually putting on some weight. And that's when I remember I became what was called a restrictor. I would restrict myself so that I could indulge in all this other stuff because I wasn't going to give it up. I wanted it. I had to have it. I wanted it so badly, and yet I didn't want to put on a lot of weight. So I would restrict myself, and maybe I would skip breakfast. I would skip lunch so that I could have a little bit more. But, you know, but gradually what happened? The weight came on. And then gradually, as I got older and older, I got heavier and heavier. I'd put on some weight and I'd lose it. I was telling Ross before everyone started, came on the meeting, or when I lived in Chicago. I can remember every fall as it would get darker, the days would get shorter, and of course there was no sun, and I would get so depressed. I really think I had some of this, what they call seasonal affective disorder. And I can remember that all I wanted to eat were carbohydrates. I wanted that warm, soft, gooey stuff that would warm me up and comfort me. And I can remember I would indulge the Christmas holidays. Well, when you talk about how we talk about, what is it called, the Bermuda Triangle? You talk about, you got Halloween, you've got Thanksgiving, and then you've got Christmas. And it's kind of like I was off to the races. And I just continued to imbibe and to eat and eat and gradually put on all this weight. And then it would come January, and I say, oh, it's time to go on a diet. But it was usually more like February, end of February, that I would finally be able, as the sun came out and the snow melted and we started having more light, that I could go on a diet. And then I would have my annual diet where I could diet and I could lose some weight. But I never lost as much as I gained. So there was always a residual gain, usually of about 5 pounds. And through the years, I got heavier and heavier and heavier. I tried all sorts of diets. I tried Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers, the one thing that I had most success with, because it really was a good plan of eating and I could follow it. And, I could do anything for a few months, but that was about it. After that, it was like I would tell myself, oh, you're gonna do really well, and you're gonna still follow the guidelines. Eventually I would start eating and I'd go back to the food again, because I never really told myself that I was going to change my way of eating forever. It wasn't till OA that I realized that this change had to come over me forever, that it couldn't just be a diet. It had to be a plan of eating that fit me like a smooth glove, like a loose glove, where I could be able to still maybe have a few nice things, maybe overindulge once in a while. But then I always had this great plan that I could go back to that would keep me in line. And so I used Weight Watchers to help me maintain my weight, when I was in OA. And it really helped. And I worked the steps when I was in OA. I went through the steps many times in OA. And it worked for me. Well, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself because I want to tell you about how I finally found OA. So I was in my early 50s. And I had gone back to school in my 30s to get a degree in social work. And so in my 40s, I started working as a social worker. And I worked in a VA hospital. I worked all over the hospital. That was the one great thing about working in a huge hospital, is that I could work in one department, then I go to another department. So it was in the mid-90s that I found myself in substance abuse and psychiatry. And I would hear all about these 12-step programs. And of course, I had heard about AA. I mean, everybody knew about AA. I mean, it just was out there in the world. But I started hearing more about it. And I was thinking, I wonder if this is something that might work for me. And I said, it sounds like maybe I could have an addiction to food, maybe really an addiction to sugar. Could this be true? And so I started paying more attention and, listening to the groups and listening to different things that were going on. And I finally, it was the year 2000, and I had hit the 200-pound mark. And I was so disgusted with myself. I didn't like the way I looked. I didn't like the way I felt. Again, my clothes, a size 20s, were tight on me, and I was just so disgusted. I couldn't control the food anymore, and I hated that about myself. Thank you, Ross. So I looked up OA on the internet, and I found a couple of meetings in my neighborhood, and I started going. And so I started going to OA. And you know, when I went to OA, I embraced the program completely. I did the steps. I started out, I got a sponsor right away. Within a few months after I did steps 1, 2, and 3, I was sponsoring. And I have continued to sponsor and be in OA. And in 2011, it was the first time I was taken through the steps using the big book. I had always used OA literature, and this time someone took me through using the big book, and I fell in love with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And since then, my recovery has taken off like gangbusters. It's just amazing. You know, the first step says we're powerless over food and that our lives are unmanageable. It doesn't say that we're powerless and that is why our lives are unmanageable. What it really saying is that our life is unmanageable and that causes the disease. The unmanageability is what causes me to rely on food to solve my problems. So my food addiction really started with the unmanageability of my life. And then I learned in OA, I learned and going through the big book is that what I have is a spiritual malady. And this spiritual malady occurs when I'm separated from a relationship with my higher power. I become sick all over again. It's kind of like I'm thrown into agnosticism. I have this ability where I don't see and I don't recognize that I'm separated from God. And then I think that I have to get in the director's chair and that I have to solve my own problems again. And I forget that there's this higher power out there that's going to help me. And then what happens is that I start getting angry and hateful and jealous. And I have this fear that builds and I have problems in my relationships and I become miserable and depressed. And that's like a barometer. And if you're familiar with on page 52, it talks about the bedevilments. And to me, the bedevilments are a barometer of what untreated food addiction looks like to me. So when stuff in my life is going on and it's going wrong and it causes me to want to use food to relieve that discomfort, I need to step back and I need to see what is really going on in my life and why. And these are the things that have happened as a result of my separation from God. And I like to use the analogy of wind blowing the leaves. You know, when you look in the summer and you see the trees and you see the leaves blowing, you can't see the wind. All you see is the leaves moving. Well, the wind represents my separation from my higher power. But the wind blowing the leaves represent the difficulties in my life. So when I see those leaves blowing, I see those difficulties. That's a reminder that I'm separated from God, separated from my higher power. So then the big book says, you know, we have to ask ourselves, why shouldn't we apply to our human problems the same readiness that we use to change our point of view about our food? You know, I rely on God to remove my craving for food. Why can't I rely on God to relieve my problems with my relationships? Instead of beating my head against the wall about my living problems. So, you know, then I have to ask myself, am I having trouble with personal relationships? Am I having problems with my spouse, my children, my parents, my employers, my employee? Is this trouble theirs or is it mine? Is it my problem that I'm not seeing things right? And what about my emotional nature? When I go to bed at night, am I kept awake by terror that people will find out the hidden parts of my life that I want to keep a secret? Am I kept awake by that? Well, that's a sign. There's the leaves. I see the leaves blowing in the wind, and it means that I'm separated from God. In the same way, when I get depressed and I'm miserable, you know, again, there's the leaves blowing in the wind. What about making a living when I'm just not satisfied with my life? And not about just more about money, but just about I'm just not satisfied with the way things are going. I'm satisfied with who I am, what I do. Maybe I'm not good enough. There's the leaves. They're blowing in the wind. I can't see the wind, but I can see the leaves, and I know that I'm in the bedevilments, and I need to trust God. So, you know, I need to know that I can alone cannot fix me. I think I can. And I have to remember that I can't, that the center of my life is God. And if I'm in the center, then I'm playing God. You know, I'm like a little boy. He goes into his father's closet and he puts on his father's suit of clothes and it doesn't fit him. Do I do that? Do I go to my mother's closet and put on her dresses and say, oh, this doesn't fit me. Look how big it is on me. I don't want to play God. I want God to play God. I can't fill out those clothes. I want God to fill them out. So, you know, these are the things that happen to me. So, what happens when I'm in the bedevilments? Again, I remember at this point that I'm separated from God. So, I think I can handle my own problems. So, I'm faced with this first step problem. My life is unmanageable, and I turn to food. So, nobody likes to think that we're bodily unable to qualify and take care of our food, you know, but I do. You know, it's not surprising that, you know, my food addiction has been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that I could eat like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, I'm going to control my eating is a great obsession of every abnormal eater. That's what the big book tells me. And this persistence is an illusion. So I have this obsession, this thought that excludes or outweighs all other thoughts. It's this thought process that comes in and it outweighs everything. And what is the obsession? The obsession is this illusion that I distort things.
I'm
It's
in.
it's this delusion that I tell myself. And then it leads me to a delusion. And the delusion is the lie. So I'm going to give an example of how that works in my life, and then I'm going to end. So my obsession is that I can eat as much of this one food as I want. I'll be able to control it eventually. My illusion is that I can eat it like other people. That's the false perception. I tell myself that I'm a normie, and my delusion is that I can be satisfied with one serving, and that's the lie. I'll never be satisfied with one serving. I'm a compulsive overeater. I will never, ever be a normie. And until I understand that, I'll never be able to turn my life over to my higher power. Thank you so much for letting me share.